Today's episode of the Mighty Parenting Podcast is brought to you by Acree, the on-demand virtual writing tutor for students. And I'm very excited. I actually announced this last week, but in case you missed that episode or you're new, wanted to make sure you know that Acree has started a free trial. So if you go to mightyparenting.com and click on sponsor tips in the menu, you'll see Acree's information and tips and shows and things they've been doing with us. If you click on any of those links, they'll take you to the Mighty Parenting page and you can sign up for a free trial to check that out. So be sure to pop on over and see what they have. And after you try the free trial, or if you purchase the program, let us know. Love to hear your feedback and what you think about it.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I'm your host, Sandy Fowler, and our sponsor is Acree. That is ECREE.com. They are the solution for teaching your teen how to write well. Your kids can practice whenever and wherever they want, and the on-demand AI writing tutor gives them instant feedback. So check them out at ECREE.com. Today, we are talking about one of the big concerns that many parents have. We are talking about how are we ever going to afford college for our kids who want to do that. I know in our family, we were fortunate enough in the area of scholarships because they covered huge portions of the cost. But even if you get a full tuition scholarship, you still have room and board, which I don't know about other areas, but in the Midwest, I found that's basically $10,000 a year at most schools. And then you have books and fees and transportation costs. And one of my girls had to have a professional wardrobe for the events at her business institute. And things just keep popping up, internships and study abroads, and all this stuff happens. So what is a parent to do? How can we possibly prepare for this and mitigate some of that cost? Because we also don't want our kids going out into the world with a bunch of debt. So we have Ron Carruthers here to answer those questions and more. Ron is an expert college and financial planner who finds creative and effective ways to fund college dreams. He has worked with over 4,600 families to make kids' college dreams come true. And Ron, thank you so much for joining us on Mighty Parenting and taking time out of your schedule to share some of your insights with us here.
Sandy, thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here this morning.
So, Ron, when I was looking through your work, I noticed that you actually kind of have a firsthand look at what kind of pain college can cost, because when you graduated high school, you actually couldn't afford college. Is that right?
That is absolutely true. And I graduated number one in my class. And it was, it wasn't like five kids only. There was 400-ish kids in my graduating class. And my dad never went to college. My mom didn't graduate high school. And so nobody was even thinking about college. Excuse me. So when I got in, it just wasn't in the cards. I mean, my parents would have done whatever they could to make it happen, but we had no idea how the process worked. No real money saved for college. And so I opted not to go for a couple of years. And then later, when I went back and began working in the finance tax side of things and planning side, kind of tripped over the college rules and realized there's a lot of information out there that parents aren't getting. And that's kind of what led us to today having this conversation.
It is. It's amazing how much there is to understand about this system and this process and how things work. So let's maybe start back. You mentioned the idea, you graduated and there wasn't money saved. And as parents, hopefully we're doing that. If we're not actively doing it, we are aspiring to do that. Some people started when their kids were babies. Some aren't doing it till later. But what is it that you'd want us to know about saving for our kids' college education?
Oh, where to start? I guess the first thing that I would tell you is, if you haven't saved to this point or haven't saved very much, you're not alone. There's a tremendous amount of guilt that I see. And I'm a numbers guy, so I'm not a touchy-feely person. But I see so much anxiety and guilt, like, oh, we should have done this and we didn't. And it's like, right, you and pretty much everybody else, like, join the club. So the first thing I would tell you is, if you haven't saved a dime, just start. Just start saving money. Save what you can. And really, I mean, a lot of what I hope we'll talk about today is how the system actually works, so that even if you didn't save quite enough, hopefully you leave this conversation with Sandy and myself, you know, with us, really having a good idea that all is not lost, you're going to be fine, and your kids are going to get to go to a great school, so just relax a little bit. And by the way, just so you know, the statistics are, CNBC published this 3 years ago, the average parent has enough money saved for one of their children to go for one half of a year at college. So if you've done any more than that, you're doing great.
Well, and it also, hopefully this conversation will help us to realize that we don't have to spend our retirement savings on our kids' college education, because that's another problem, which we have talked about before on the show. But you had mentioned specifically 529 plans, and you actually don't recommend that parents use those. Is that true?
That's absolutely true. I'm like the lone voice in the wilderness that talks against them.
And
let me explain. So first of all, what you have to understand is the background of 529s. 529s were never designed to pay for college. What do you mean? Well, let me explain. They were really designed as an estate planning tool for grandparents. So grandparents could pre-give money because you could avoid some of the gift taxing rules, and you could give up to five times what you could normally give in 1 year into a 529 plan. So a lot of people don't know that. And I have a groupie. I have exactly one groupie. From about 15 years ago that used to follow me around to all my classes, and he would just hang out and we'd chat afterwards. And he was friends with the then president of Harvard. And when these 529s first kind of came into the national spotlight, he asked his buddy at Harvard, hey, is a 529 a good thing or a bad thing? And the response that the then president of Harvard gave should have been very telling. It was, are we on or off the record? It's like, we're buddies. We're off the record. And he goes, they're the greatest thing for college savings. The guy's like, really? And he goes, yeah, that Harvard has ever seen. And he's like, wait, what? He goes, look, this is an opportunity for grandparents to put a ton of money into accounts that then we'll take from those kids and not offset with aid. So it's great for us, not as great for the students. So that's kind of what you have to understand about the genesis of 529 plans. There's actually six specific reasons that I give. I won't go into all six, but the biggest reason is that they can count against you when it comes to a school's giving their own money, much more so than a normal checking account or savings account or normal mutual fund. So again, I don't have anything against them from a structural standpoint. It's just, when you've worked to save money for college and you've saved it there and you were otherwise eligible for aid that the college now turns around and tells you you're not going to get because we need to spend your 529 first, then you just shot yourself in the foot as a parent. So there's circumstances where they make sense, but for the most parents listening to this, they're going to hurt you more than they're going to help you. And that doesn't mean if you have money in one, don't rush out and get rid of it, you know, because there's other factors in play. But if you're looking for a place to start saving, don't start there.
Okay. And we're going to hang on to that thought and set it aside for a minute. And we'll probably come back to that then as we get more into how that system is functions and what the structure of the whole financial aid thing is. But before we even do that, before we get into the how am I going to pay this huge bill, I'd love to talk a little bit about things that we should be looking at before we even choose a college. are there some good signs, bad signs, red flags? What is, we're out there doing these, you know, junior year college tours and our kid is running around campuses going, oh, this feels great, or oh, this doesn't.
Ooh.
Where can we direct their attention? Some areas that would help from a financial standpoint.
So yeah, this is a great hot topic. I first of all, I have to preface this, which I said once already, I'll say it again, and then I'll stop bringing it up. But remember, I'm a numbers guy. And so one of the things when my practice, my tax practice and kind of my financial advisory practice really geared 20 something years ago in the direction of college planning, we would help families, Sandy, get a bunch of money for college. Great. Everything's wonderful. They loved us. We loved them. It was a great thing. But then what we noticed a few years in was kids were changing their majors midway through. All right. We didn't think too much of it. But in a lot of cases, it was adding a year, 18 months, 2 years to how long it took them to graduate. Now, from math standpoint, that means we got to come up with more money, more, you know, more filing. It's longer until the kid gets delayed. So as we started researching this, what we realized is most kids were going off to college with no earthly idea of why they were there in the first place. And it was kind of like, the analogy that I give is, it's like a wedding, like planning the perfect wedding, like 5,000 white turtle doves are going to be released right at sunset and a horse-drawn carriage is going to pull me up in the meadow and, you know, all this stuff that someone might dream of. And then we get to the groom or the bride and like, oh yeah, I'll just find somebody to marry on my way to the church. And that to me is what a parent's doing or a student's doing. If they're like, oh yeah, I'm just going to get there and I'll figure it out while I'm there. That to me, and again, I'm just one guy, feel free to ignore me, but that to me is what comes first. Why are you going to college in the first place? Now that doesn't mean that we need to know exactly the one career, you know, where the skies part and the angels sing. It's more like we kind of get a good idea of a general direction of interest that is because your student has done some research on what careers pay and what you actually do. And we've identified a number of careers that sound good and pay decent. And then we've kind of looked at the similarities and determined the major or majors that gives us the best shot of getting into those fields. Then we can begin to look at colleges, because then we can look for colleges that offer those majors. And I know that sounds like, well, that's obvious, right? No, actually, it's not. I get kids all the time here in California that tell me, oh, I want to go to UC Santa Barbara. We're like, okay, that's great. That's a great school. What do you want to study there? Oh, I want to study business. We're like, I hate to break it to you. They don't have business. They're like, what? Like, yeah, go look on their website. So that's what I encourage first. And that go ahead.
And that is an absolutely fabulous point there, Ron. And we actually did a show recently, episode 92 with Dennis Tratin, that I would highly recommend parents go listen to, because Dennis helps us with that process of how do you help your kid figure out what might make sense so that you can avoid those shifts and those changes in the majors throughout the year and help them get a degree that they won't regret. And then obviously, as this show is about the finances, of course, if we don't extend college, then we save more money too, which is always a good thing. So one thing we need to look at is, does this college actually make sense for what our kid wants to do? And did we help them figure out what it is they want to do? What else should we be looking at?
I'll give you from a general standpoint. First of all, it is important. I mean, we were chatting earlier before we started recording about the dream school and stuff like that. And look, we want all of the students that I work with, I want to have a great time at college. I want them to be happy that they're at the school. The number one reason that students come home is because they didn't fit in. That's literally, I've been tracking this for 27 years, and that is reason number one far and away. And often what happened was they didn't really visit the school at all before they showed up, or they visited in the middle of summer or in the dead of winter when nobody was actually around. So it's almost always a student issue where they just didn't fit in. So we really do encourage them, go visit school while it's in session. You can save yourself a lot of time by doing that research first. And I just made a note so I can go back and listen to episode 92. And when we're done here with Dennis, but go visit the schools while it's in session and really come up with a working list of about 8 to 10 to 12 schools that you plan on applying to. And the definition of a good school is you have a fighting chance of getting in, a reasonable chance. It is affordable, either based on what we're going to talk about in a few minutes, the formulas that we chat about, or it's just you can write the check for the school. And they have the major that your student is interested in and that your student is actually excited about going there. Those are kind of the four criteria that we look at to determine should it stay on the list or should it go. And 8 to 12 schools applying to kind of seems like the magic number. Any less than that, and you really run the risk that if the math just doesn't go your way, you get into one or two or none. And any more than that, believe it or not, and it actually starts to hurt your chances because the schools look at you and realize you don't really know why you're going to college in the first place. And so we'll waitlist you and come back later and see if we're still interested in you. So just something to think about. Yeah, we learned that one the hard way. I mean, you learn a lot in the trenches. And hopefully you can only, you don't want to practice on your own kids. So hopefully this helps families out there to really think these items through so they can get it right the first time.
No, that is really interesting. And it does help to visit campuses because we did that with both of our girls, but we'd had a lot of discussions and things first. And my oldest one, my alma mater, we went to, and she's like, yeah, it's great. There was a lot of wonderful things here, but it was that. She's like, I just don't feel like I would fit in here. And as I sat back and I really thought about what that school was like, she was right. That was not going to be a place where she would be comfortable. Could she finish her degree? Yes. But it was not going to be comfortable. And they didn't like to give out money, which was another
thing. Another
and that
factor,
was,
right?
And that was my younger one. We were on tour and it was the second or third school we went to. And we didn't do half the tour. And she kind of bumped me and said, Mom, we can leave if you want. I'm not going here. She said, they don't give out any money.
Yep.
She said, I'm not paying $45,000 a year. That's just not going to happen. So we can go. So those things, I mean, both sides of that equation are important. And I appreciate that checklist for us. But I have to say, I missed number four. So I got a fighting chance of getting in, affordable, whether it's the getting financial aid or having the money to just write the checks.
They have a major.
Have the major they want. And what was the last one?
The kid likes it. Your student is excited
to
go there.
They like it. Okay.
Well, you'd be surprised at how many are like, So again, we're not trying to get families away from we're not trying to say, don't go to your dream school. We're just trying to say there has to be some practicality on it. I mean, a private school these days, you can buy your student a big Mercedes, like not even the little one. They cost the same as one of those big land yacht Mercedes. And it's like buying them one every year for 4 years or 5 years. No one would do that. And yet somehow it's acceptable when it comes to college. And my answer is no, it's really not. Let's just apply some common sense here like we would anything else.
Right. But I also tell people, don't discount a school because of the price tag before you really look into it. And that's something you're going to help us understand. I mean, one of my girls did go to a school. She could have gone to an Ivy League school for what their tuition is, but they did have good financial aid and she got great scholarships. And so it ended up being the same price, not even less than a state school. So we should at least look at whatever we want to look at. As we're looking, help us understand how to look at these numbers. Like, what do we need to understand about how this system is geared and how we can best maneuver it?
Okay, fair enough. So the starting point, there's a 5-step process that we recommend every parent go through. It's only 5. It's not 27 steps. It's 5. But most people don't get started until step four. That's where the average parent starts and they skip the first three steps. So let me kind of go through them quickly in order, and then we can spend as much time on any one of them as you'd like. The very first one is you have to understand that the federal government, Congress, has put together a formula based on about 100 criteria of what they feel the average family can pay for college. Keyword is any college. Now that number, how you get to that number is by filling out the free application for federal student aid, known as the FAFSA. That's the way the cool kids say it. And if you're gonna write it down, you gotta write it in all caps or you're not cool. But that FAFSA, you have to understand what goes into it and the definition. So this messes up a lot of parents. Congress has created a definition of the word asset and the word investment that no sane person would ever use. It's very specific. It applies only in these circumstances. We would never use the same definition if we were applying for a loan at a bank or just calculating up our investments. And so you have to understand kind of that rule and many like it of what counts, what doesn't count, and what really, like, what counts more than it should. So that's step number one, is understanding those rules and understanding that often there are legitimate ways that you can lower what you're expected to pay. All above board, no shenanigans. And so that's the starting point. That's step number one, the most important step, because everything flows from that step. And step four, by the way, we'll skip ahead, is where you actually start to fill out the paperwork. And the problem is most parents start there, don't read the directions, so they don't understand what they're actually being asked. And so they make a mistake, most parents do, over 75% make one or more critical errors on the paperwork that raises what they're expected to pay. And so they then tell their friends, oh, well, you make more than me and we didn't get anything, so you shouldn't even bother. And it just spreads this whole myth. And frankly, the colleges really don't have a vested interest in correcting that myth because it causes parents to pay more. So step number one, know your share, get it as low as legitimately possible. Step number two is there's three critical questions you have to ask every college. The first is, what percentage of need do you meet? So back to my formula, they're going to give you a number. And if I'm being too technical, Sandy, please interrupt me. It is a little easier when I'm teaching this in a class live and you can kind of see it on a whiteboard. But
we're going to put all of this into the show notes. So anyone can go to mightyparenting.com and check out the show notes for Ron Carruthers' episode. If you just put his name in the search, you will find it. And then you can get, I'll have all of this dot pointed out for you in there.
Perfect. Love it. So they're going to give you a number back called an expected family contribution. And it's
the
crazy
because gives you that number.
When you go to file it, right as you submit it, if you do it online, when you successfully submit it, it'll be like, oh, your EFC, it doesn't even really explain to you what EFC is. It's like, it gives you all these numbers, and one of them is, oh, your EFC, by the way, is this. And that number is the number that they're now going to send to all of the colleges, telling them, hey, Sandy, here's what you can afford for each of your two daughters, or whatever parents listening in, they're going to send that number to the school. The school is going to take their total cost of attendance. So all the numbers that you were chatting about right as we started this interview, tuition and fees and room and board and book money and walking around money, and they are going to take that, subtract your number from their number, and the difference, if there is one, is how much need you're eligible for. Not how much you get, but how much you're eligible for. So now moving on to point number two, we need to find out for each school that you're considering three things. How much of that need on average does the school meet? How much of it is free money versus loans and work study, which are always going to be part of the equation? And how much of that, how long will it take your average student to graduate? So armed with those three numbers, or percentages, you can actually sit down and reasonably calculate what your share is going to be at a college versus what they're going to help you with and how much the school is really going to cost you. And often, as you were starting to mention a minute ago, often you're going to find that the private school may not necessarily cost you more money than the state school. Now, that doesn't mean a private school is better. Each has their pros and cons. It just means a lot of parents look at that $70,000 or $60,000 or $45,000 cost, and they're like, forget it, kid. Like, no, you're going to the state school. When in reality, that may end up actually costing less. That's the important thing. And that's step number two.
Well, and that is still going back to that idea of what's the right fit for your kids. You know, for my girls, they both wanted smaller schools. We have some great state schools that they really liked. And we have a lot of state schools that are inexpensive. My alma mater doesn't happen to be one of those. It's a state school that got very pricey. Right. But it's just, they were not the best fit for my kids. So I was grateful that we understood some of this system so that we were able to work through that and understand that. And I just want parents to realize that, you know, yes, those other pieces you even told us, Ryan, you know, it has to be a school that your kid likes, or they're going to spend time and money and may not be able to stay there because they just can't handle being in that atmosphere. So we're going to go through here. We're going to understand, what's going into the FAFSA. We're going to make sure we understand what assets and investments are and find out our expected family contribution. And then we're going to have our three questions for the schools. We're going to want to know what percentage of need they meet, how long it takes a student to graduate. And what's the third question, Ron?
Let's see, what percentage of need they meet, how much of the need is free money versus loans and work study.
Gotcha. And also remember this, work study gets paid directly to your child's accounts. So depending on how, you know, if that actually has to go for school, make sure you understand that little nuance, because depending on your kid, that could cause some trouble too.
Yeah, I'm taking, more than one parent has learned that the hard way. Where'd that money go? I don't know. So those are your first two steps. Let me give you the third step. The third step is, sounds a little counterintuitive. It's not directly in line, but stay with me. We found that's when you sit down and calculate, where am I at for retirement and how am I going to pay my share? So now we have a pretty good handle on realistically what your share should be, right? It shouldn't be the whole thing most of the time. It should be some number that's lower than that. And as long as we pick schools that have money to help out, then we should be in good shape. But now, most parents live, and if any of you have sent kids to college and done this, you know, and you're not alone, they live in college's hell because they go through, and every semester beginning, they go through the absolute panic of, okay, how are we going to pay for this year, this semester's tuition? How are we going to come up with that? And we're like, No. We need to figure out where all of it's coming from up front. And it's probably a pretty good time to take a look at where you're at for retirement, so that you can make good decisions now. Because they will lend you money for college. And as the saying goes, they will not lend you money for retirement. And so it's just a really good time to take a look at that. And be like, okay, how are we going to pay for our share? Are we going to use student loans or parent loans for students? Are we going to use some of the equity from our house? Do we have enough already set aside? Are our grandparents helping out? Are we going to pay as we go, cash on barrel head? And again, you know, getting through this process so you can actually enjoy it and have the time to, if your kid studies abroad, going and visiting them in Europe or in Australia or wherever they're at, that's a great thing. And so that's why we're like, okay, before anybody applies anywhere, let's just kind of think this through. And one of the things I pride myself on in my office is I tell my clients, you're going to know where every dime is coming from for every student that you have, even if they're little right now. So we can check that box off, be done, and go back to like enjoying your lives.
And I want to toss in one other thought here. If you're listening to this and you are in a situation where you haven't saved and you just don't see how this is going to work, there's a whole nother option out there that I never hear anyone talk about. And that is, which actually you alluded to at the beginning, Ron, your student doesn't have to go directly from their senior year of high school to their freshman year of college. They can also take some time and work. I know one family where their child was actually homeschooled, and so they finished high school and were a little bit younger, and the family wasn't ready financially for them to do college, plus they felt that she was a little bit young. So she went and got a medical technician certificate, and she worked in that field for a couple of years and then paid cash for her college, had the money up front. So I just want to open our minds that there is also that option. And then when you pair that with what you're teaching us about how the financial aid system works, that can open some more doors too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, people ask me all the time because I never actually went to college. I mean, I went to get degrees, but I never went to college, never had a college experience. They're like, well, do you mind that? I'm like, no, I had a great time. I lived in South America for a little bit. I worked. You know, I just, no regrets at all. It certainly wouldn't hurt. And two of my children went directly to college and it was great. One went to USC, one just graduated from Northeastern last year. And then my youngest worked for a couple of years in the restaurant business. She turned around and traveled a little bit and now she's at Berkeley and really a much more serious student than she was 3 years ago when she just wasn't really ready for it. So the end, what I always tell parents, I think you'll like this one, Sandy. It's not about getting your first one in. It's about getting your last one out and having them get a job and be off the family payoff. That's really like
off the family payroll.
I told you you would. I knew you would. All right. Don't forget to give credit. But yeah, that's really, you know, parents get really worked up sometimes. I'm like, take a deep breath. We're just getting started here. And remember, it's about getting the last one out and a job, not the first one. And they're like, okay, yeah.
All right. So getting them all through. We're on point number four or step number four.
Yeah. Now we're filling out the paperwork. So now you understand what counts and what doesn't. You've gotten your share as low as possible. We've picked schools that have money for you, ideally, you know, or at least in theory. Although most of the, when you do the research, it's usually pretty accurate. We got your situation organized, so you're not going to be selling body parts on the internet to try and pay for them to go to school. And then in step four, we sit down and fill out the paperwork. Now, this is something that every year on October 1, the government a few years ago went and solved a problem that nobody had. And here's what it was. They moved the date when you could start filling out financial aid paperwork from January 1 to October 1. Somehow, in everybody's collective minds, and I don't know if you're getting this in the Midwest, but we get it out here like every day in early October. Have you filled out my forms yet? Have you filled out my forms yet? Have you filled out my forms yet? So just understand, it's more important, first of all, that your forms get in accurately, not early. Number one, you do not have to fill them out on October 1st or even the first 2 weeks of October unless you're in like some weird circumstance where your kid's an athlete and a school has specifically requested it. So we had a panicked student yesterday. I was like, hey, are my forms filled out? We're like, no, we haven't even started them yet. And we already told you that. Oh man, my guidance counselor told me they're due. And it's like, no, they're not. We looked it up. The earliest she had a form due was February 15th. So we're not encouraging families to wait until the last minute, but you don't have to drop what you're doing at 12:01 a.m. on October 1st to try and fill these forms out. And the system is very glitchy the first 2 weeks when it goes live. So just plan on getting it done end of the year. You will use the previous year's information. So if your student is graduating and going to college in 2020, we would be using 2018's information. And for most people listening to this, your taxes will be done. That's the information that you'll use. And just remember, to follow the directions and read the definitions, that will keep you out of a lot of trouble. That's 90% of where the mistakes come from. So
read the definitions very carefully.
Yep. Again, the definition of an asset does not include equity in your home. It does not include your retirement accounts, your 401ks, cash value life insurance, annuities, on and on and on and on and on. The value of your business, if you own a business, only counts if you employ more than 100 full-time or full-time equivalent employees. And so we have clients that have a tiny little, you know, clothing business. They're like, oh yeah, my business is worth $200,000. And it's like, no, it's not according to them. You know, the bank may see it differently, but they have a very specific rule. And again, if we were chatting about assets, we would include 401ks and equity in your home, and the value, if your car's paid for, would include that. And if you had big Ming, you know, fancy Ming vases and Persian rugs and big diamonds and stuff, you'd include all that. Not here. None of that counts.
So that also goes back to, at the beginning, I asked, you know, if we are saving for college when our kids are young, yes, we still want to save for college, but it's also a good idea to look at what are considered assets. Bingo. And to be looking at, okay, so how much are we putting into our retirement and where is that going? Because that all folds in together. And one of the things that we learned along the way was that that FAFSA number is hugely important. Even though, like, my daughters, they got their scholarships, they got merit-based scholarships, but the school still couldn't give them that money until they had the FAFSA numbers.
Thank you. I tell parents that all the time. And they're looking at, and again, even though it's quote unquote merit scholarships, they still look at the FAFSA and use some version of need to try and determine whether you're going to get a merit scholarship. Fair? I don't think so, but that's what is, not what we want it to be. And so you're absolutely right, Sandy. Most schools require you to fill out that FAFSA even for merit money.
Okay. And so what is step five?
So step five is you can, not that you should, but in many cases, it makes sense to appeal an award. So let's go through the scenario. You got your EFC as low as possible. You pick schools that had money. You applied to 8 to 12 of them. You figured out how you're going to pay your share. Filled out your forms accurately and on time. On time simply means when they're due. It does not mean October 1st. Accurately means you followed the definitions and incorporated your planning into it. And now your kid gets into six colleges. Five of them give them your student grade awards. The sixth one doesn't. Murphy's Law says your kid, their number one choice is going to be the sixth school that didn't give them any money, right? Or didn't give them enough. You don't even want to know how many times I've seen that happen. Yeah, the kid didn't care before the school didn't give money, but now that the school didn't give money, that's the school they have to go. Their life is ruined. So you can appeal an award. And we used to use the word negotiate, but it sounds far too business-like and hostile. Appealing is a much better word because it's actually a pretty friendly process. So first of all, you can appeal based on what you thought you were going to get. So meaning like, hey, we did some research, and when we did our research, you know, we noticed, and I'm going to give these in order of like worst to best. So just, you know, we were kind of expecting a little more along the lines of this. Can you guys take a look at that and tell us, you know, if we were right or wrong, or maybe there's something else we might be eligible for? And we've had families successfully get more money. You can also appeal based on another school offering you more, though you have to do it delicately. Meaning you can't just come up and be like, look, these guys are giving us more, are you gonna match it? It's more like, well, we don't really want this to be about money, but right now it kind of is about money. You know, perhaps there's something else that you guys could look at that we might be eligible for. Could you please look into it? That's what we're talking about. Now, the third reason is, or the third way is, based on a change in circumstances. So remember, they're looking 2 years back. So if your student's going to college in 2020, they're looking at 2018. Well, maybe 2018, you had a completely different job than you have now. or you were married to the kid's mom or dad and you're not anymore. I mean, a lot of parents get divorced right as kids are getting ready to go off to college. That just kind of seems like the magic time. So, or you had medical bills, or you got a one-time bonus never to be repeated, or a number of circumstances. You can explain those to a school, document them. The key is documenting them. And now many schools, if not all schools, will consider that, and often you'll end up with more money. So we get, you know, for every 100 families I work with, 75 of them, 80 of them, we get what we're wanting to get. We're very happy with it. We pick the school that they want to go to the most, and that's the end of that. For a handful of schools, you know, about 20% of our students, we have to go and actually appeal an award letter. And it doesn't take a lot of time. Generally takes a week or less. So even if you're right up against trying to make a decision, it doesn't take that long. So that is the other area. And I could tell you stories that would blow your mind. I mean, where the school increased their award by $15,000, $20,000 once we explained circumstances away. And I'm not talking about loans. I'm talking about free money. So, you know, more common is $3,000, $5,000, $7,000, $8,000. But at least once a year, I get a $10,000 or greater increase just by asking. And if we multiply that out over 4 years, that's from $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 over 4 years for explaining a circumstance or asking.
Well, so and even, you know, even $3,000 to $5,000 or $2,000 or $1,000. We sometimes tend to look at these huge numbers for tuition and things, and then we go, oh, well, that's only $1,000 or only $2,000. If someone walked out to me now and said, hey, do you want $1,000? I wouldn't say no.
So, you know, little capitalist.
Don't discount it just because it pales in comparison to some of the other things. It's still money that you don't have to come up with out of your pocket. And I know that my daughter has later in school, not when she was going in, but later on, some of the things changed in the way financial aid was being done. And 1 year she just went into financial aid office and said, you know, I saw what you guys did here. And this just really isn't, she said it nicely, but she basically said, this isn't going to work for me.
Good for her.
So they sat down with her and they worked through it and they found some more scholarships that would fit her and what she was doing. And that brought it back to what we had been expecting. And that's all it was a matter of, hey, this is what's been going on year after year. And suddenly it's different. And we weren't expecting that. And we can't manage different. So that was, and that was a learning experience for her too. And I appreciate the negotiations class she did have at their college that helped her do that.
Good for them. Love it.
Okay, so we can appeal the award. And I think that that is something that parents never talk about. I have never heard someone say we went in and appealed our award. But this isn't some huge drawn out formal process. It's just contacting the financial aid office and politely discussing circumstances.
Absolutely. It's generally very friendly, even if they say no. I've had literally one instance in 27 years where they turned around and they were straight up rude, where they were just like, don't call us again and don't this and don't that and all that other stuff. And so that was, you know, in 27 years, most of the time, even if they're saying no, they're really, really nice about it.
And if they're straight up rude, then they're straight up rude. It didn't hurt.
Yeah, and actually, that's not true. I've had two cases in 27 years, one private school and one public school. And by the way, the private school, we were actually able to go above that person's head. They were mortified to find out what had happened. And they actually gave us a $19,000 increase on that year on our financial aid. The other public school, we just couldn't work with. And I had to tell the parents, you know, like, look, they're telling you how they're going to treat your student, you know? So I mean, you can move forward, but I think I would take this as a red flag of the way, what to expect over the next few years. And they're like, you know what? You're absolutely right. So anyway.
This is true, because this is the gateway, right? This is when they don't have you yet at the school. So
correct, right? We're in dating phase.
Right, so. Exactly. All right, Ron, we have time for maybe one more thing. So if you had one other piece of advice for us, what would that be?
Wow. Follow all the advice we've already talked about. You like that? You know, I mean, really,
true.
We've really gone through, I mean, know why they're going. I think I'd rather use the time to summarize what we talked about. Know why you're going, do your visits, you know, look at the criteria. And I would absolutely encourage everybody to go back and listen to this more than once. Share it with your friends, because this knowledge does not, I can't tell you, I've been teaching in my community for 27 years on this. People have I'm on the news all the time. People have never heard of me. Parents have no idea. And I'm like, I'm trying. I promise you I'm trying. So just go through and listen to this more than once with pen and paper if you didn't the first time, because we really tried to outline, you know, some of the criteria you look at when you're selecting a school, the criteria when you're selecting a career. The one other piece of advice I do, if you'll indulge me, I do have one more thing that I forgot to say earlier.
Hey, you did the summary for me. I don't have to do it today, so you can do anything you want.
Okay,
now.
There you go. And then don't forget the 5 steps. Take them in order when it comes to financial aid. And the last piece of this that I would say is, ideally before your kid heads off to college, have them do an internship in the field that they think they're interested in. That's money right there. And let me explain why. In my own case, I told you part of the story right as we started this. I'm like, yeah, my family didn't have any money. Absolutely true. I got into some good schools. Also true. And I went back years later. Also true. What I didn't tell you was why I really didn't mind not going to college. And part of it was I thought I was going to be a doctor the entire time that I went to school. And I loved human anatomy. I loved chemistry and biology. I loved it all. But the summer between my junior and senior year, I went and worked in a doctor's office and realized that absolutely was not for me. And so I saved myself. So when it came time to apply, like my heart wasn't really, I mean, I was in it and I got in, but my heart wasn't really into it because I hadn't yet figured out what I wanted to do. And it just, nothing against medicine. I have tons of clients who do it and love it. It just wasn't my thing. And so interning in that field, you know, tons of kids want to be lawyers. They work in a lawyer's office. They're like, yep, nope, I'm good. And that's really important because if you hate it, let's find out now. If you love it, then let's keep you interning in this field the entire time that you're going to college. So now you not only come out with a degree, somewhere in there, someone's going to start paying you for this internship because they're going to feel bad for you. And so you're getting money to do it, but you're going to come out with 4 or 5 years of experience, which puts you right at the front of the job line, the career line, if you even have to apply at all, because a lot of my students don't, because they get referred over to a job or the place they're interning offers them a position. And my son went to Northeastern where they force you to do it. You go 1 year and then you do a semester of school, a semester of work, a semester of school, a semester of work, and you graduate in 5 years. And he did three co-ops, they call them. Two of them offered him jobs when he was done at almost 6 figures. I mean, it was just a great experience. Not every school has that program. So we encourage you to set it up on your own. And that's the number one tool that I would tell. That's the number one closing tip I would give you.
All right. That is great advice. And for anyone who wants to get in touch with you, could you share your website?
Yeah, it's roncarruthers.com. And as long as you spell my name right or close to right, you'll get there. Ron's the easy part. Carruthers is Carruthers. We have a ton of resources on there, stuff that you can look at and interactive stuff and videos and blog posts and you name it. And then you can also, we have a fairly active Facebook page, Carruthers Solutions. Although I've been a little bit negligent on it while I was on vacation the last few weeks. And my number's on there. If you want to set up a time to chat, you're more than welcome to reach out to us. I generally book up a couple of weeks in advance, but we're more than happy to chat with any of your audience that has questions or whatever. I get busy, but I'm not that busy. So please feel free to reach out. You're more than welcome to.
All right. Thanks, Ron. And thank you, everybody, for joining us today and being part of the Mighty Parenting community. Remember, we're more than a podcast. We have information and tools for you. We do presentations for parents groups. So pop on over to mightyparenting.com to see all that we have and be sure to grab your free guide on talking to your teen. Remember, you are a mighty parent, and I will see you next week.